Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host.
And I'm Stasi Okowski, your storytelling assistant host.
And I'm so glad you are. Today is Monday, May 18th, 2020, and our theme today is open season. Stash and I don't know what the other one of us is going to tell. So Who knows what we're going to get? We'll find out in a minute now.
Yes.
I want to thank Andy Offit-Irwin for opening our show with his original composition, Tarry Here. Thank you, Andy, for being yourself and for allowing us to use your song.
Camera's off.
Are you going to talk, Stash, about the week?
I was going to say, I have news about, I was supposed to perform at 7 libraries in Washington County. And I was asked last week if I would be willing to do the performances instead of in person at the 7 different libraries, virtually through a Zoom meeting. And I said yes. My response was, "Well, that would be kind of neat, and I wouldn't have to get in the car, which is not that big a deal because the libraries, none of them are very far away. But still, it's nice. I could be relaxed, keep my bedroom slippers on probably, and do the program from my kitchen. It turns out that one end of my kitchen where the door is behind me is a nice wall to have as a background. We have a poster from the National Storytelling Festival, and also a poster of a painting that a friend of mine in Arkansas did for us when we left there in 2012. And so that would be pretty good. And I've got a couple things worked out. I figured out I can use my flash ring.
I won't be able to
upset any children if I'm doing it in my house and they'll see it. It'd be like watching television that way. So I have some things I'm thinking I can spice up the stories with. Because
I have no doubt it will be very spicy.
I hope. Just like I'm learning all kind of new things. So yesterday I learned how to make better fins for my water rockets, and that was a pretty good education, because making fins for the bottle rockets that I make, they are flimsy and don't last long. But this new method is really wonderful. So yesterday I spent some time right here at my desk making fins. And so I've been learning some stuff.
Sign up for your library science programs.
Well, these aren't science.
You're going to do all.
They aren't going to be science. They're going to be fairy tales. But I've determined that a good... Well, just from my experience, I knew that a good flashbang, something is a nice way to get people's interest and some excitement in the story. But
I'm excited already, so don't be surprised if I pop up in my 5-year-old pinafore.
That would be so interesting.
Weird.
No, I like interest. That would be interesting. So. I've been notified that Speak Story Series will go next month with Paula. Is that right? Laura Packer. I almost called her Para Lacker, but Laura Packer. And that's going to be June 9th at 7:30. If you go to speakstoriesseries.com, you can get information and how to join the Zoom meeting. And also there will be information about how to pay. It'll cost $12 to join. And unless you have a season ticket, such as like you and I do, then you'll be able to join. But you need to register so that Adam can send out the correct, correct bunch of numbers and letters and stuff in a row that you can click on. And the correct link. And we had 73 devices attending the Kevin Kling program.
He was marvelous. He was just wonderful.
I truly believe that was the most laughing that Terry and I did. She was watching on her phone. I was watching on my iPad. And we were in the same general area. And it was just wonderful to laugh that much.
I laughed the whole way through also.
Yeah. And so many of the laughs were just humorous, not necessarily belly laughs or the, but they were just because it was just so much fun. He's so quick.
Fun to listen to.
Yeah. And I loved it that, he mentioned how he jumped around a little bit here and there. But I loved it because he just reminded me of somebody who is walking down the road from one town to the next. But there are, there are little paths or garden paths or something off to the side. And so he eventually gets to the other town, but on the way he stops and goes off and talks to, this farmer or that farmer or this person or that person, and then gets back. And it always seems to fit just really well. And not everybody can do that well. I'm easily distracted sometimes to the point of where I don't get back on the road. And so so I never get to the other town.
Can we do a time check? Tell me where you are in
7 minutes and 30 seconds since you said good morning.
Okay. Thank you.
I started it right on time today.
You did. I'm a minute behind you.
I also did a great investigation and found out how to fix my phone, which I'm using as a timer, to not turn off. Mm. So the screen never goes dark.
That's impressive.
I do it when I'm finished. I can just click it and it'll go dark. But there is there's a thing in settings which says, never. You can set it for 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, so that if you put your phone down, the screen goes blank. But this one says never, so it's really wonderful.
I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, it's in settings on brightness,
Okay. All right. So, are you going to tell a story?
I do. I do have a story. I have a new story. I wish I had a typed copy or a book to read it from, so that I would do it justice. But I'm going to try. I learned it from watching Richard Martin, the German storyteller, who I really, really like. I wish I had known about Richard when I visited Poland, because I would have tried some way to get to see him while we were there for 2 weeks. And he's a delightful storyteller, always the same, and sometimes serious and sometimes lots of laughter. But I was looking at his site a few days ago, and he was he said he has a story, that a version that was new to him from this Scottish storyteller, Duncan Williamson. And I have heard that name before. I don't know much about him. I don't know anything about him except that he's Scottish. But this story is in a collection of his called A Thorn in the King's Foot. And so, shall I begin?
Please.
Right. Okay. And we did thank, you did thank Andy.
Yes.
So we're, boy, I can't believe we're so together already today. Here it is. Well, Jack and his mother lived together. They were the only two people in the house. And they had been, they lived very happily. Jack helped his mother do everything around the house and some of the work on the property. It was a small house, but they were very comfortable. And one morning, Jack got up and his mother was lying down in bed, and the fire hadn't been stoked, which she usually did in the morning, and he couldn't smell any of the breakfast being made. And he went to her room, and she was still in bed. He said, "Mother, why aren't you up?" She said, "I just feel poorly, Jack. I think I'll just rest for a while. Why don't you get your own breakfast?" So he did. He went to the kitchen, and he was starting to build up the fire, but he decided to go outside and see what the day was going to be like. He's easily distracted. And when he went out, he strolled around the house, and near the – they had a great tree, and here he was near that tree, and he thought, those nuts are ready to eat. I'm going to get some of those nuts out of the tree. And there were kind of nuts that grew high on the limbs. He picked up a stout stick and threw it high in the air, hit the tree, a couple of the branches, and some nuts rained down, and he caught some of them. It was just put them in his pocket, and He looked up the path, and he saw a figure walking towards his house down their path. And he realized who it was. It was a person in a black outfit. The head was covered with a cowl, and carrying a sigh over one shoulder. Jack immediately recognized it was Death. And thinking of his old mother, Jack, without any hesitation, ran towards Death with that stout, sticky head and began beating him and beating him and beating him and beating him. And Jack was in a fury, and with every stroke, Death became smaller. It was just as if Death was shrinking on purpose to avoid the hits. And smaller and smaller and smaller, Jack continued to strike him until finally Death was down so small that Jack could pick him up between his thumb and his finger. And he reached in his pocket and pulled out one of those nuts. And it was the kind of nut, I guess like a walnut. I think they're the ones that you squeeze and you can open them up. There's a seam all the way around. And he squeezed that nut and it opened up, and he shoved Death inside and closed the nut. And without thinking, he ran down the path onto the small road that led down to the edge of the lake. And he threw that nut as far as he could out into the water. turned around and walked back to his house, fearing what he might find. And when he walked in, there was his mother. She had gotten up and she had started the fire, and there was coffee being made, and she said, "Oh, I feel so good, Jack. I really didn't feel good before, but now I feel all just right. And why don't you go down to the butcher and get us a nice piece of meat, and we'll have a big breakfast." And so he got out, ran to town, which wasn't very far. And when he got in, he said to the butcher, "I would like a nice piece." He described what he wanted, and the butcher said, "I'm sorry, Jack. The strangest thing has happened. I tried to butcher one of the animals this morning. I tried to start off the week with fresh meat, and my knife was so dull I couldn't cut the animal's throat, and I just couldn't do it. It was as if I just couldn't kill it." And Jack was disappointed, but he left and saw all the birds singing and everything, and he went back to the house and told his mother about it, and she said, "That's what a strange thing." And so as Jack went on with his day, he found things were changed somehow. When he had gotten back to the house, his mother told him she couldn't get a fire going. No matter what she did, she couldn't. It seemed like none of the wood would burn. And Jack was puzzled. He walked around and he realized that it seemed nothing was acting as it should normally. And then he realized that he had trapped death in that nut and thrown it into the lake. And the only thing he could do was to try to find that nut. And so he did. He went down to the lake and stared and stared and stared at the water, walked along the edge, and finally, as the waves washed up on shore, there was that nut lying in the sand. So Jack retrieved it and took it to a rock, picked up another rock, and smashed the nut open, and out poured death. And it was gone. Jack went back to his house and found his mother in bed. And she was very weak. And she said, "I feel awful again. I just have no energy and I just don't feel good at all." And she said, "Things have been very strange this morning, Jack." And he decided to tell his mother what had happened. And when he did, she said to him, "Jack, you can't stop death. It's not only inescapable, but death is necessary in this world." And with that, she closed her eyes and she died. Well, Jack enlisted the help of some of the neighbors, and some of the women prepared his mother's body. One of the carpenter neighbors helped him build a coffin. They dug a hole and had a burial service for his mother. And The next morning, after his mother was laid to rest, Jack packed up many of his belongings, tied them in a bundle, put the bundle on the end of a stick, and stepped out of the cottage and decided that he was to live life, and in honor of his mother, he would go out and find adventures and live fully, because that's the way life is.
Feature.
Oh.
Jack's mother. This is like a whole new world opening for Jack, a whole new set of stories without his mom.
Right. But that, Richard Martin often tells these wonderful stories that are, when I saw the title of it, Death in a Nut, I thought, what is that about? Because the story I have learned years ago, and I tell sometimes, is you might recognize this term, wickety whack, get in the sack. Have you ever heard that? So anyway, the story I know about death is where Jack has some adventures and he gets a magic sack, and if he sees something he wants, all he has to do is say wickety whack, get it in the sack, and the thing jumps in the sack, and he tricks the devil into the sack, and he climbs a really high tree and hangs it in the highest branches where nothing can bother it, and as he goes along, nothing is dying, nothing, and over a period of time, in that story, it lasts a long time, Jack learns that he should not have done that, that death is inescapable and that it's necessary for humans and the rest of the world. And so he goes back and releases the devil. And of course, he dies, which is a completely different approach.
And yeah.
Yeah. The nice thing about the Jack stories is Jack in the Jack stories is not the same Jack all the time. It's Jack, you know, it's like my wife says, she recently said this, I married a stash. And I love that she said that, because I think being a stash is a very special thing.
And is it like being a Jack?
I think so. I think so, because it's of adventures that I've had and things. So anyway, that's the story. And anyone who would like to hear any more stories by Richard Martin could just type his name in, Richard Martin Storyteller, Germany, and his site is magnificent, because he has 70, 80, 90 stories at a time listed on this site. And some you can listen to and some you could actually copy because they're in print. And he says, tell the stories. He says, there is no reason why you shouldn't tell any story on his site. You have his permission. Just credit the storyteller. And that's why I said this was a version by Duncan Williamson.
Well, I should tell our listeners that we're listening. You are listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling. Over past almost 3 years, you could go to talltales.enlightenradio.org.
Okay.
Do we have other things we need to talk about before another story?
West Virginia Story Telling Guild is going to do a program in June and another one in July, and it's called Monday Stories, and it'll be on the second Monday of the month. I'll check that before we have to before it's in absolute truth, but it's going to be a Monday at 7 o'clock. And I'll just have to check on whether it's the first Monday or something. I believe it's the second Monday because I had a confusion with that in Speak Story series. And I have no idea who's going to tell at the next West Virginia Storytelling Guild's Zoom meeting. I think they're setting a lineup now. So
okay, that'll be exciting.
Yes. And did you listen to Mark last week?
No.
No, you didn't. Because I missed it because I got in late, and yeah, they closed the meeting. Yeah. So I'm anxious about to hear that story that he told about Mudflap. It's getting cool. So, okay, I think you're up.
It's my turn to tell a story.
You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We took a short break there, and now we're back. And, Sash, I think I'm going to tell a gardening story. Since we're on open season.
That sounds good. I can't wait to listen as your story flowers.
Well, it's a vegetable story, but okay.
Okay.
All right. So when I was 5 or 6 years old, my dad... radish seeds. I could see they were radish seeds because there was a big picture of a red radish on the front of the seed packet. And I looked at the seed packet and I looked at my dad, wondering what I was supposed to do with this. And he said, "You can plant them. They came from the bank. You see there on the side, on the back of the packet, it says, 'A penny saved is a seed planted.'" And I looked and there it was. It said that, right where my dad showed me those words. But these were radish seeds. Why did it say that, and why did they come from the bank? He said, "Well, they want to encourage you to open a savings account with them. But these seeds are for you. I got them at the bank, but I brought them home for you, and you can plant them. Maybe you can find a flower pot in the basement, and you can plant some flowers, plant some radishes for us." Because right out in front of our house, we had a big by 6 feet, and many of our neighbors had grass planted on their little 6 foot by 6 foot plot of dirt in front of their apartment building. But in front of our apartment building, we had tall boxwood bushes planted all the way around that little square bit. So it was very dark in there. And it smelled a bit like cat pee because there were feral cats all over the neighborhood, who I was sometimes on good terms with. We used that little square with the boxwood bushes all around as a hiding place for hide and go seek. So I spent a lot of time in there, sometimes by myself and sometimes with other kids. There were other places to hide in other people's front yards, but the neighbors were not fond of having children trample over their grass. So mostly it was in my little square. And that very day, I went inside the square of boxwood shrubs, which were taller than me, so there was not much light in there. And I planted my little radish seeds all in a row, right up, almost smack against the bottoms, the trunks, the roots of those bushes. And then I watered them, and then I waited. I knew it wouldn't happen overnight, but I knew that it would happen. And I had to be very careful because I didn't want other kids coming in and seeing my secret garden. So whenever I went in or out, I would look carefully to make sure no one was watching me as I came into my secret garden or exited the shrubbery to get out of my secret garden. Excuse Excuse me. Well, I came back the next morning and nothing was up. It was still bare ground. Came back the next day, still bare ground. I came back every day for a week and there was still nothing coming up. And I was about to despair. The next morning I came out and I could see a tiny little bit of green, a row of little green specks coming up through the ground. Radishes! I knew they had to be radishes. So I waited a whole another week, coming back every morning to check on those radishes. And I watered them every single morning. And finally, after 2 weeks of waiting and watching, sneaking in and sneaking out, I decided that had to be enough time. And I pulled up every single one of those little tiny green leaves, just two green leaves above the little root, the little stem, and the little root. And when I pulled them up and laid them in a row in front of my knees, they smelled a bit like cat pee, but they did look sort of like radishes, but they were teeny, teeny, tiny. They were like three hairs wide, but they were red at the bottom. So I knew they had to be radishes. And I was devastated because they were so small. I'd murdered them. They never had a chance to grow. Oh, my eyes filled up with tears and I almost started to cry. And then the sun came out. And even though I was way down at the bottom of those bushes, I could see a shaft of sunlight moving across the dirt. And I looked up, and the sun was shining. And I knew, well, this was not my last chance being a gardener. After all, I had managed this far. I had created 15 tiny little radishes all by myself. I was a radish goddess. I was a garden goddess, and I picked up those 15 little radish roots, and I ate them, one by one by one, and that's how I became a gardener.
Oh, boy. And did they taste good?
They tasted delicious.
Oh, boy, that's wonderful.
They tasted like radishes.
And to this day, you do grow things.
I do grow things. I don't fertilize them with cat pee anymore. But.
No, that's a good idea. Yeah. That's good. I appreciate people who grow things. You know, my wife grows flowers, and she's, she's planted all kinds of things around our place. We have a small place, but she's really planted lots of nice things. You know, we have kale and we have spinach and we have thyme and, thyme, thyme.
Yeah.
And tomatoes and peppers.
Have you had her tomatoes in already?
She put them in. What's today? Well, I think Friday.
Yeah.
Maybe. She just Actually she got the tomatoes in in little pots, like, you know, the tomato plant.
Yeah.
In that, you know, little pots that are made out of stuff like some kind of cloth, seems like.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And she kept them in the house. And then outside on in the sun, and then in the house when it was cold, and then finally there's some preordained day that was decided. You know, she was in contact with Judy, a friend of ours, who grows everything under the sun and has been doing this for years. And she's growing things nicely. And,
I've seen Terry's gardens in past years. I haven't been over this year, of course.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I never have grown anything on purpose except for once I did in the classroom. I once did an experiment with the kids and had them grow things from, I'm not so sure, I don't even remember, it's been many years, but from seed, they grew something, and it took a while by the windowsill, and the whole purpose of the experiment was to show them how things need water, need sunlight, and that plants actually seek the sunlight. And so we had, when the plants got to be a certain size, we covered the plants by putting a cardboard room around them, so that one side had a window in it that was open. And we turned the cardboard room different ways and observed the plant after a few days. And in each case, the plant grew towards that opening, seeking the sunlight and the fresh air. So it was very impressive to me and the kids. But I think that was my only foray into something about growing, because I was trained as a physical scientist, a chemist, and I don't like growing, don't like the idea of growing things unless you're doing it the right way. And I have no experience or love for growing things in the ground. I don't have any dislike of it. And I certainly eat the materials. You know, my wife's tomatoes have been very good. But I just don't have the desire to do that. I'd rather build the model plane or make something out of wood or something out of metal. So, okay.
So you're going to tell an anti-gardening story?
No, I'm not against gardening. Anti-gardening would sound terrible. I am definitely not against gardening. I'm all for gardening, but I think people who do gardening should only do it if they're going to do it the right way. And they're going to make sure they take care of the garden constantly, like my wife does. You know, she really cares about the garden, about the materials and things. And I would probably, I know people who have grown things in classrooms and who don't take care of them. And then after a while, they're tired of them being on the windowsill and they throw them away. And I don't like that kind of stuff. I don't like wasting something like that. So anyway, no, I have a story, but my story is about something completely different.
Okay.
It's about brothers and it's about the amazing thing that can happen with human beings. And since I've been around for a very, very long time, I have witnessed this more than once. And this story is one that I love because it has a number of messages in it. So, once there were these two brothers. This took place in a foreign, foreign land a long time ago. And one of the brothers, they got along well as young boys, but they often disagreed about things. One of them had a great love of material things. And he wanted to have toys. He wanted to have better toys than anybody else. You know, he liked clothes, and he wanted to have the nicest clothes. Whereas the other brother was satisfied with whatever he had. He didn't complain about anything. If he had a book, he was happy. If he found a nice smooth stone, he thought that was pretty cool. And so, as the brothers grew up, the one boy began investigating how to become rich, how to become successful, how to become important, And he put all his energy into, actually, he had a plan. He wanted to marry someone who had money because he had decided that he didn't really like working too hard. He'd love to have things, but he would rather have them because they were just given to him. And he didn't have, like, you know, the other brother was the opposite. If he saw something that he really liked and he really wanted, he would find out how to go about getting it. If it cost a certain amount of money, he would work hard, save his money, and get the thing. By the time the brothers were young men, brother number one had met and married the daughter of a wealthy family. And with very little work on his part, he had a nice home because his in-laws gave their daughter a house for a wedding present. And so he also got a job in his father-in-law's business. Well, the second brother, he became a fisherman. And he met a young woman. They fell in love. And he was a single fisherman. He had a small boat, and he would go out into the water, and he would fish during the day. And he caught enough fish that he could sell at the market and enough fish that he could take some home to his wife. And one day, it had been a long time that the brothers had spent any time together. And the fisherman was thinking, I should see my brother. I wonder how he's doing. I know he has everything you could possibly want, and I'm sure he's happy, but I would like to see him. We haven't talked for a long time. And as he was coming into the shore in his boat, there was a creature. He never could figure out what the creature was, but there was a creature that had arms and legs and kind of human features, but it was sort of a fish-like thing. And it was trapped. It was trapped in a piece of a net and was struggling. And it was right at the edge of the water. The fisherman pulled his boat up onto the ground, or sailed it up onto the ground, and got out, and he went and he used his knife to cut the netting away from this creature. And to his amazement, this creature stood up and thanked him. He couldn't believe that he could understand the words the creature was using. And the creature said, I thank you for saving me, and handed him a small little box. And he said, whatever you wish for will appear in this box. And so the fisherman thanked him. The creature turned, dove into the water, and he never saw the creature again. And by the time he got to his house, he was laughing at himself because he thought, I must have imagined that, or I don't know. But anyway, he was quite amused by it. And he thought, you know, maybe that was somebody that had just made themselves look like a creature and having some fun at his expense, you know. So anyway, he got home and he told his wife about it, and they had a good laugh. And then his wife said, well, do you really have a box? And he pulled it and he said, oh, yes, I do. And he said, here it is. And he handed it to the wife. And so the wife said, well, it probably is just a joke, but why don't you try it? And so he did. and he made a wish. He just made a wish. He wished for some flowers. And when he opened the box, there were flowers. He couldn't believe it. So over a period of time, over a short period of time, just a few years, he still went fishing. However, he also made wishes. And he and his wife slowly gained some wealth. They made wishes for things that they could use to make other things that they could sell, and they became prosperous. Well, the brothers hadn't seen each other for a number of years, but the first brother, who was a businessman and was doing okay, had heard that his brother had become wealthy. And he decided to visit his brother. And he sent a note to his brother and said, I would like to come and visit you and see you. We haven't seen each other in a long time. And the fisherman brother was so happy because he cared for his brother. So he said, we're having a very nice get-together on the island out in the opening of the bay. I actually bought a piece of property on this island, and we live there now, and please come to us. Well, so the businessman brother, he showed up at this event that they were having, and there was plenty of food, and there was wine, and there was all kind of things, and there were maybe 20 people there. Everyone seemed to be having a good time, and he was amazed because he always thought of his brother as kind of slow and, you know, a man who was happy to smell like fish and work in a boat all the time. He wasn't impressed with him. But he noticed that every once in a while, his brother would go into the kitchen or another room, and he would come out with something, like a new bottle of wine or a new dish of food or something. And the businessman followed him once and stood in the corner where his brother couldn't see him and watched him as he lifted the lid on a box. He said, I need another bottle of white wine. I wish for a bottle of white wine. And then he opened the box and there was a bottle of white wine. And he closed the box. What the businessman didn't hear was, thank you, that's enough. He actually said that to the box. That was the instructions that he was given when he first got the box. Well, the fisherman went back into the party. The businessman brother went to that box and just said, I want some salt. And opened it, and there was salt in the box. Well, he closed the box. He went out, told his brother, I realized that I have to go home. I forgot that I shouldn't be staying so late. Thank you very much. And he left. And he left with that box. Well, to get from the island to the mainland, he had gotten there by boat, and got in the boat and he was rowing. He rowed back, and he noticed the box, the lid was popping up a little bit. And he thought it was strange. He's rowing and it wasn't very far. And then all of a sudden, he saw the lid of the box had been pushed up and there was something white coming out of it, and he realized it was salt. And more and more and more and more salt. As time went on, salt was spilling out of the box and filling the boat. before he got halfway to the shore, the boat was loaded with salt. And the boat was loaded so much that it was getting near the sinking point. He went to that box and he was shaking it and saying, stop, 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 stop. But it wouldn't stop. In fact, it kept producing salt more and more and more and more and more. His boat sank. And he was gone. No one knew what happened to him at all. And that tale is told. It's an old Japanese legend. And it's told to let the children know how the water became salty. And that the oceans are salt water. Because that box never heard the right words to stop producing the salt. And so it's still doing it to this day.
Great story.
Yes. It would be even better if I had remembered the brothers' names. But I didn't, and I didn't want to make up names because then I would wind up changing them back and forth and stuff. So
yeah. Well, I've never heard that story before. I like that one. I thought it was going to be a Fisher King story.
No, I heard this many years ago, and I know I have changed it over the years some, because instead of the box, it was a salt grinder, but it was the kind of thing that you could grind stuff, but it was magic, and so it also would give you whatever you asked for. And just so you said thank you, that's enough. It would stop then. And I like that. I told that in a couple schools. And in one place I told that a young girl, probably third grade, came up and said, "That's a good," at the end of the, as the children were leaving, she came up and said, "That's a good story, and it has a good lesson that you should you should always be grateful for what you have and thank people." And I was like, "Thank you so much. I'm glad you got that." And when she left, I thought, "I wish I'd thought of that." Because I didn't really think of it that way, you know. I guess from a child's point of view, but it is a good lesson.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good one.
Yeah. And that's what stories are for, to teach us lessons.
Okay. Well, since I have totally discombobulated our time plan, tell me where we are in your mind.
I have the clock on. We're at 27 minutes and 30 seconds. So that right now we're pushing a show of 58 minutes.
Okay. So it's time to close.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Stosh.
Oh, you're very welcome.
This was fun and educational, even though it didn't start out the way that I thought it would.
Nope. You're right. But what I like about it is you and I are, what's the word I want to use? Let's see. You and I are whatever. We must not be what I thought we were going to, what I was going to say. But
are you talking about a closing for the show?
No. I do want to say this though. Let's see.
Okay.
You and I mistakes are inescapable. And sometimes they're even necessary. But you and I are never flustered by things that go wrong. You know, we are good at carrying on and making do. So.
And we actually have fun at it.
Oh. I wouldn't miss Mondays.
All right. Well, I can't wait to listen to this show because I have no idea what we... I am fascinated by how all this happened. Okay.
Yes.
You got.
Shall I close? This is Fanny Crawford closing out the noon. Let me do that again.
Yes.
This is Fanny Crawford closing out the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour.
And this is Stasz Diokowski closing out by listening to Fanny close it out.
We're okay. Independent community radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia.
Broadcasting out of Bolivar, West Virginia. The Enlightened Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand our stories. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Yeah.